I would love to see that. It was just beautiful. It was all in metal.
Twin turbo 406, you know, daily dry sump to 4080. The cage is very organic in it. It's all kind of weird formed on the Pomax. It's all Motec.
Okay.
It's got 488 Ferrari brakes on it that are just, I mean, I studied that for a long time on what caliper nobody's used in this industry, and came across that and finished it the way I want. So it's got F1 wheel hub, the real legit, like, you know, nuts and hubs.
Hey, welcome to Car Guy Confessions, brought to you by ARP. I'm Jeff Smith. This is my car buddy Cam Benty and car builder Steve Strope, and we're going to tell you some stories.
Welcome to another episode of Car Guy Confessions with Jeff Smith. We are sponsored by ARP-Bolts.com. Our pals over there doing this great job making bolts and everything. My friend Cam Benty here, and our special guest star.
I am not Steve Strope.
Joy Trepanier? Yep, yeah. Sitting in Steve's spot. This is kind of weird because usually Steve sits over here, but he's off being a hero right now.
I'm working on the ponytail.
Yep, somebody's got to do it, Jeff.
Got to get the ponytail out there.
Troy was gracious enough to spend an hour time with us, and man, I don't even know where to start. What my heart tells me to do is goes back to our first event where we met, which was the Super Nationals.
Yep.
With your pink 66 Chevelle.
Yeah.
You and your mom and your dad.
Days ago. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, that was so much fun.
That's
that
what
was
started
so cool.
It.
Yep, yep. And we always do the same kind of cover. And I think your car was on that first cover, wasn't it?
Yep, yep.
And we always called it the crack up on I-5 cover because we said, how many cars can we jam into this shot? And we had like eight or nine cars in one photo with the General Tire girls out front.
Remember them?
And and that was
What year was that? Because I remember seeing you at DeCoin.
86, 87 was the first years I had my Chevelle there, and then I think I redid it, so it might have been 88.
Probably 88 because I started Hot Rod in 87.
And I was at Carcraft, and we had done I was there for PHR. I was the editor of PHR at the time, so we had some pictures of your car as well.
That's when I met Gray. So it all started there for sure.
I'm so sorry.
Yeah. Yeah. I went on a sophisticated, street rodding thing, But my claim to fame still is, having the street machine with Boyd wheels on it, like a Ducoy. I didn't even know what that was.
Bet. Right.
That was fun.
Yeah.
That was crazy. And then, you're a trendsetter.
You built your car in your dad's diesel truck garage. He gave you a little shop off the side, and you built that car yourself.
So I have I grew up in my 66 Chevelle. My grandfather bought it brand new. I remember hauling.
I didn't know
that.
He
bought it
brand
new.
Was your grandfather's car?
Yeah.
Oh, that's
bought
awesome.
It brand new.
That's
I remember
awesome.
Hauling my 70cc Honda mini bike in the back seat growing up down to the Honda dealer and everything. And,
perfect.
And he was the guy in town. My grandfather was a pipe fitter. So he had a little one-car garage adjacent to my dad's automotive shop.
Okay.
And where is this?
Okay. So in Mantino. Illinois.
There we go.
South of Chicago.
South Chicago, 50 miles.
Nice.
And so if you need anything welded in town, go see Johnny type thing. My grandfather, he made clothesline poles, basketball poles in his little one-car garage. Well, in the winter, he'd back the car out to work in the garage, and he backed out it wouldn't idle, so he put a piece of angle iron under to keep it running. And, well, it fell down, went wide open, and blew up. So that was the start of my hot rodding career.
Perfect.
I was 14. He gave it to me, and then we just started piddling with it, and that kind of started it all. And then doing it with my mom and dad, obviously in the early days, was a big thing.
You bet.
It was a family thing. And then luckily met you guys and Gray and got on the magazine stuff, and then came back with my 60 Chevy and then just kind of tried to be consistent.
The green car.
That was Hot Rod of the Year.
That was a huge car.
Hot Rod of the Year.
Yeah.
First Power Tour, the Victory Tour. Mm-hmm. Gray rode with me, drove cross country. Yeah.
And the rest is
history. Yeah. Yeah. And I miss Gray because, obviously he was a great influence, and I feel bad for these younger guys, that didn't know him. And now, now it's not as much print media, which we lived for.
Sure.
And,
not even close.
Yeah.
Not even close.
I understand the power of social media, but I'm old school.
Yeah.
And Gray always, Bonneville was his thing.
Oh, yeah.
And unfortunately, he passed away before I got into that. And I mean, now that's just taken away what we do. So
I got to tell this great story. I was the editor maybe about, it was at my first year, and it was after Bonneville, right? So Gray comes back from Bonneville.
Right. Okay.
And back in the old days at 84-90, we had individual offices, right? And the editor actually had a secretary. How about that?
Imagine that.
Wow.
Yeah. Imagine
that. So I'm in my office, and the desk faces the door. The door's off the side here. And I just out of the corner of my eye saw him walk by, and then he sticks his head back in the door and goes, what? And then he just goes, it was so bitches. Yeah, and then walked away. Yeah, that was great.
Mr. Flip Flop.
Yep. Unbelievable.
You know, it was really a cast of characters. Everybody on staff that I inherited, Pat Ginnall.
But there were characters. But there were characters.
They were absolutely characters.
How many writers at Hot Rod when you were there?
I think 5+, and then plus me.
Because I went to Hot Rod in 80 with Lee Kelly, and Gray was there. I was introduced to Gray with no fanfare. It was like, just, there he is. That's right. That was the joke. He after he knew me a little while, he goes, are you married? I go, like, no. He says, I got a niece, and she's, you guys would be kind of good together. And then he goes, and he walks by the door, and he comes back like seconds later. He goes, are you Mormon? And I go like, I went. No.
Sounds like great. We cut to the chase.
And he goes, I said, no. And he goes, forget about it.
Never mind.
Another thing, I was lucky too, because I came in, right at, with Boyd and Gray and Jack Chisnall, Posey and Angelo from Ford and Barry Loback and Briz. Mm-hmm. And they kind of took me under their wing a little bit as a young guy. And that was that last really, I think, big group of awesome guys,
Who started their own shops, owner-operator kind of things.
Yeah, and when you had to, back in the day, as you guys know, you had to build the car, and I had to drag it all the way across country out here.
Right.
To be in the right place at the right time and consistently do it to get some leverage in the industry.
Yeah.
Now you just take a picture and click it, and you're everywhere.
You're everywhere. So right. But back then.
Yeah, I call them Facebook famous now. So,
good point. That's a good point.
It was a lot harder back then to get – to hook up with manufacturers and everything. Yeah. So it's definitely a different deal.
It was a face-to-face thing.
It was 100%.
You bet. You had to show up. You had to look presentable because the manufacturers had plenty to pick from back then. Then, if you're a good spokesperson, which you always were, you built your own stuff, you knew what you were talking about, all that is huge. That was the way it was back then.
Yes.
Today, you're generally talking to somebody who's not really qualified. I hate to say it, not really qualified to judge you in any way, shape.
Yeah.
And they're usually a lower echelon person. We all got to start somewhere. That's not what the point is. But they aren't well-versed in what's going on. So they really don't have perspective.
Yeah.
They look at a number. They look at clicks. They look at that kind of stuff, which is it's a shame. Because there are a bunch of guys that are getting missed.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And, that are very creative and very smart. Mm-hmm. But you're right. Facebook famous. Really, really well said.
And the other point is, and I forget who told me this, but it makes perfect sense. It's like, the goal was to get your car on the cover of Hot Rod or Car Craft or Popular Hot Rodding or whatever the magazine was, and that was the goal, was you get your car on the cover. Now, there is no cover for digital. It's just a feature, and there's no cover. So there's really no impetus to you're still going to build the great cars, but now there's no place to showcase them, which is really kind of sad.
I missed that bad. Like Wheel Hub's done a good job, and when they said they were
gonna they're one of the few that still can do that.
And when they said they were going to do that, I was thinking, oof, man.
Yeah.
Let's hope you want it.
Yeah.
Good luck.
Yeah.
Exactly. And they've done it. They've done it right, and it's pretty good. And then now Brian's got the modern rodding.
Modern rodding. Yeah.
Which is good.
Yeah,
and
which is excellent.
I'll still go grab a catalog out of the cabinet before I'll go to the computer and
Oh, you bet. Exactly. Yeah, well, it's kind of it's a fun chase.
It's definitely a generational thing because I find difficult. Even with the electronic catalog, you flip the pages.
Yeah.
I can't seem to find stuff on there. I could go right to the page I need of the ARP catalog, and it's right there. I know where it is. I just have difficulty doing electronics. Amen. And then the young kids now, they just
right on.
So how old are your kids now?
My daughter is 26.
She's six.
Was a Division I softball player, travel nurse. She's a travel nurse now and built a house in Arizona.
Okay.
And Jack, he just graduated from University of South Florida.
Excellent.
For business. And when I first met, I guess I'll go past here for a minute. And then Luke, my young boy's 21. He's a left-handed Division I baseball pitcher.
Really?
Wow,
It's been my hobby's been
where's he playing?
Sports. Bradley University.
Oh, I don't know where that is.
It's south. It's 2 hours south in Peoria, Illinois.
Okay.
There's Caterpillar down there.
Okay.
They're in the Missouri
Valley. How
could
I have missed it?
Yeah, Missouri Valley Conference. So it's their conference finishes top seven every year.
Awesome.
They're right out of the Power Five. That's good baseball.
Very good. Love baseball. My son played a lot of baseball.
He's a 92-mile-an-hour left-handed guy. So
it's crazy.
He's got real potential maybe to get drafted. So, but that's my hobby, the softball stuff with my daughter. And my claim to fame is I coached early on with my daughter, and that was in my. Luckily, I had my mom and dad and Moose and people that worked for me, so we kept relevant at all the shows. Sure. But I was doing that. I didn't want to miss that.
Yeah.
And,
And then, well, that's good, too. Yeah, that's important.
No, I didn't miss any of it. It's awesome. 4 years of college softball, I made every game in North America.
Awesome.
I didn't miss any. So,
that's awesome.
Did they play outside of North America?
No, Manny heard there. She went, before that, went down to, like, Dominican and stuff and played with the USA team and stuff.
Okay.
But it was that was my hobby. And then the baseball thing now with my other son, that's getting ready to start. So
I know it's a car show, but it's like I love watching the baseball. My son played a lot of baseball in Southern California.
Yep.
Competitive. I mean, crazy. One of his last times up at bat, he faced Giolito, who is throwing 100 in high school.
Wow.
Oh, yeah.
So,
100
mile an hour fastball. Yep. And just crazy, crazy talent. But what a fun time.
No, it is.
Yeah.
It really
absolutely
is.
Yeah.
I mean, we've
the
had
best.
Their ups and downs with my son. I mean, he's got the juice because he's a lefty. And, you know, most lefty starters in the MLB are 90, 92. But he's got a good change-up, whatever. But
moves.
We had Tommy John surgery last year. So he strained his elbow. And luckily we went to the – I knew somebody, and made a call. And we went down to Texas to the Dallas – the Texas Rangers – doctor did the surgery.
Oh, okay.
We flew to Texas and did it. So it was
that's right.
It was a good thing because the bill of health is important if you can get to the next level.
Sure.
Tommy John's common.
Yes,
I mean,
very.
Otani just had it in September, and he got a $700 million contract. So, I mean, that's just part of the gig.
But not all at once. Not all at once.
But anyway, like the...
Did you build him any custom parts for his arm?
No. I got all the damn, the leftovers.
That's right. There you go. No,
but Jack, he came back from South Florida, and when I met Brizio back, I was probably 18, and he's seen the Chevelle. We're talking. It's a nice car. He goes, man, you should build parts, man. Take it from me. I've been building cars my whole life. I wish I'd have been building parts and making money that way,
which was
right?
probably really good advice, right? Because
course,
the volume is huge. And,
so didn't listen, you know. And then he told my dad, and he didn't listen, And then now Jack, my son, we've got a little parts business, Rad Rides Performance Parts, and he does that. So, dipped into that a little bit. And,
nice.
And then we're trying to make stuff that fixes problems. I mean, a little bit of it's cosmetic, but the majority of what we're doing is problem solving.
That's
so
great. That's great.
It's a good thing, you know. But it's good to have him. He came back home and worked at the shop for about a year. He does SolidWorks and stuff too, but then he moved back to Florida. So we have a remote Rad Rides location in Florida. He ships out of there.
Not bad.
But it's good. But he's part of it, and it's good. So
How fun is that?
Yeah,
that's great.
It's good.
That's
so we spend half our time, half the year doing that, the car stuff, and honestly, half the year doing Bonneville stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's really become a big part of what we do.
Yes. Nice.
We built four cars now, and
Let's start off with that, because that was like a major change for you guys, and that was the Blowfish.
Yeah, Blowfish.
Yeah, that was the first one. That was the Mopar four cylinder, three liter.
So we always with doing the Power Tour right away, great, and then every year we did the Power Tour. So that really you guys know, you start driving in things cross country and you figure out what you did wrong. You're not going to do that again, right?
Bad.
So, I was a mechanic working for my dad out of school. So I was a mechanic before I was ever like a making anything look good.
Mm-hmm.
So I was more from the approach of making it work.
Yeah.
And so that doing the Power Tour and all that really kind of made us get better at that. And then when built the car for George, Poteet, and he's the one that drug me out to Bonneville. And he's like, you got to come out here. History crosses over and all that.
Yeah.
Went out there as a spectator in, I think, 05, and then we built the Blowfish and raced it in 06.
Okay.
And and that had the 3-liter USEC midget motor with the Pro Stock Hemi head on it, which was just awesome combination.
Yeah. Yeah.
Went 269 with it, set the record.
269 set the record. What class was it?
That was F.
Okay.
F, blown fuel. Comp Cube.
Wow.
Is that what it had? Did it have the Flowmaster stuff on it?
Had the Flowmaster muffler in it.
There you go.
Yeah.
That was,
we had the big five inch Outlaw muffler on it.
There you go.
Going through the center of the car.
That was David Featherston and McClellan. They were all involved in that.
Yeah, I've got a picture that's, 12 by, it's three sheets, so I guess it's 12 by 8 that Featherston took a shot. No, Richard Small did. Richard took the picture at the time, and I got blown up in the shop with the Blowfish out there.
But, very cool.
So that was an interesting experience. We go out there and we bring the Blowfish, and I'll never forget it. We're going into tech, and you can just hear the whispers like, "Oh, look, they brought a show car out here."
Yeah.
I mean, more than one guy said it,
Yeah.
And to me, it's like if you're building this, you're building that. It needs to be done right.
Right.
If you get lucky enough and do well, and it's done right, and then now you got something.
Yeah.
So we went into tech, normally there's two or three guys, there's a dozen, they're trying to find something wrong, and we go through that whole mess, and they found a few things, and and everything, and then we luckily went out and set the record right away with that motor, and I mean, that's a record that's probably may not be beating, because we beat it by 30 mile an hour.
Wow.
And,
wow.
And it's just, you got to spend a lot of money in them classes, because, you know, it's a F engine, so it's 3 liters. So it's, you got tiny, a weird combination. It's not nothing you're buying off the shelf, you know, LS and put a turbo on it. I mean, we made all of it, blah, blah, blah. So that was a great start for us. And then we.
And did George drive the car?
Yeah, he drove it early, early on, and then he drove it, I think a couple, he went 279. We had a 279 record with a C motor in blown fuel. He had that for a while. Then he was kind of more, got into just driving a speed demon. Much to get in both of them, which is understandable.
Sure. Oh, yeah.
And then we graduated up to the fastest. We went exit speed 320 in that thing.
Really?
So,
wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
Our goal was always to get, you know, that when I first started that project, I called Kugels, because they'd been 300 in there.
They went 300 in that Pontiac. Right.
And then I called Jack Chisnell, good friend, had been, you know, 250 in the Studebaker.
In the Studebaker.
So just kind of listened to him and then sifted through that advice. Uh-huh. And so then we were able to, the 1 year, it was probably about 2011 or 12, we had 7 passes over 300 in that thing in 1 week.
Wow.
And we set a two-way average at basically 308.
That's great.
But it was awesome. Yep. I mean,
I didn't
really
realize it had gone that
fast. Yeah, yeah.
Man.
And we had about 1,400 horsepower.
Right. Mm-hmm. So then what motor was it then?
That was an R5 Dodge.
Okay.
Yeah. You know, modified.
Yeah.
And then so we had the bright idea of, well, okay, we did that and it worked great. So we came home and that's the open deck block. So we put it, I've got a big VM6 machining center. We put it in there and machined around all the jugs, machined a cast plate, pressed it in the top to keep the cylinders more stable.
Right.
Put a 118 turbo on it and put it on methanol and made went up to meanies.
Yeah, okay, yeah.
2,600 horsepower, 1,700 foot-pounds, and then spun it out 4 times the next year. We spun it.
It was too much power,
yeah,
because
John was still working on his traction control at the time, you know, so it wasn't refined. And we spun it out at 290.
Wow.
So there's actually...
It's hands down the fastest, probably... Maybe the fastest thing out there's ever spun backwards. It went 290.
Wow.
And luckily it got backwards and got a little bit of air under the back because we have travel sensors. Mm-hmm. And it started to lift just a little bit and it tore the deck lid off, settled down, and just flat spun.
Oh, okay.
So we got lucky.
Man, that's very lucky.
And when we
usually what happens.
Oh, it's a messy.
Just, yeah.
Boom. And when we built the car, Eaton, I did a lot of stuff with Eaton in the day. I met a guy, and the lead aerodynamicist at the time for Chrysler, Terry DeConnick, was for NHRA and NASCAR, and we got to meet him. So we brought it up like a day before Christmas 1 year when he had it in bare steel and had him look the car over and stuff, and he wasn't familiar with Bonneville, kind of telling him what you can and can't do.
Yeah.
Talked about stuff, came back, finished fabricating, and we spent 40 hours in Chrysler's wind tunnel with that car on third shift.
Well, you'd almost have
it
to
saved
go
us.
That fast.
Oh, yeah, it saved us. I mean, all that little stuff. And then Terry got excited about it, and he'd come out to Bonneville with us and just had a lot of data. He did a lot of John Force's data at the time. And
that
race
takes a lot of
and,
power to go that fast.
Yeah, yeah, no
it was. It made the car safe where, you know, when we did spin it out, luckily, we didn't get in trouble. So
this shows you how little I know about Bonneville. Traction control and sensors?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, right.
Oh,
yeah.
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 I had no idea.
Yeah, we have 40 channels of information. Now we run MoTeC on the Blowfish, which is, you know.
Wow.
As long as you can understand it all, it's incredible stuff, as you know, Jeff. Or, you got it. Everybody's always at, what's the best? You know, we've used it all. M-tron is another good one. We run out of New Zealand. We run that on our Streamliner, and that has 802 sensors, and you can really control the cylinders nice. And it's, you know, a quarter of the money of MoTeC. But so we use a little bit of everything. It's all what you can control. Jeff knows that better than anybody.
Yeah.
I mean, and,
I bet.
It's like having the iPhone. You don't know how to use it. You might as well get a cheaper one.
Yeah, exactly.
Yep.
Get that flip phone out.
Yeah.
But so traction control. So. What is it actually doing? I mean, is it actually applying brakes and things like that?
No, it's pulling power back.
Yeah, what we did.
Pulls power
out
of the motor. Okay,
yeah,
fine.
Yeah, what we did in ours is we just take a reference from the front wheel to the rear wheel.
Uh-huh.
You know, that's what it's trying to balance. And when it sees that, obviously, rear wheel going faster, we just start pulling timing back a little bit.
Got it.
A little bit, and then we could open the wastegate or whatever. Right.
Makes perfect sense. Yeah. Okay, very good.
So you start managing, because think about it, you're racing on salt.
Oh, I know.
You really narrow tires. Because you want the smallest footprint.
Right, sure. There's a little friction. Yeah, right.
Yeah, less frictional horsepower.
You bet.
Probably the one most unique thing on a Blowfish that probably most people don't know is it was a one-wheel peel. It was an open rear end.
Really?
Yeah. And Kugel told me that.
Because it was more stable.
Yeah, run an open rear end. That way, if it does break loose, it won't check out on you.
Okay.
And it worked until the 1 year we spun it out, we were like, I think, 260 wheel speed, went into high gear and just too much boost, and it went to like 340. It got it enough sideways where it couldn't catch it. But all the other times, it would just spin the wheel a little bit and stay straight as an arrow.
Wow.
So, open one-wheel peel.
I would not have guessed that.
No, that would not have been my choice. Yeah,
one-wheel peel. So.
Wow. And their effort, you got to give them all the credit in the world, but that was built on the stuff that Lingenfelder did.
Oh, absolutely.
With the other guys with the Firebird that they tried to do with Akers and Carl Stagemeyer.
Absolutely.
And we've actually had Carl Stagemeyer on the show.
Yes,
and
we did.
Talked about that whole effort because they of course spun out and the car actually did a pirouette.
Yeah, it was nice.
And then came back down on wheels, which was really scary.
Lucky. Yeah.
Yeah.
Somebody
lucky.
Was watching over them.
Oh
yeah.
Boy, because they and people sometimes think, how do you know that? Because all the salt was stuffed. It ripped the parachute pack off.
Yep.
And all the salt was packed into the tail of the car.
Yep.
The only way you get that is if your car's doing this.
Yeah, right. So yep. skating along the salt.
Yeah. And John was a big help in him early days, you know. He was the brains, you know.
So when you went on the dyno, you actually went to his house and the dyno in his backyard.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
Because he's got a garage behind his house.
Yeah.
And they run this thing because when I went up there, he had invited me to come up to do a story on the latest version of his EFI package.
Gen 4,
and hardest story I've ever written. Most difficult story because I'm writing all these acronyms down.
Yeah.
I have no idea what they mean.
Yeah.
And you know, you can only ask them.
Then he gets upset. Is there anybody smarter than you in the room? Yeah, that's the next question you get. Yeah.
And so I would just write these acronyms down and then went home and try to figure out what the hell he was talking about.
Sure.
Oh, it was so difficult because I've learned that lesson when through DFI. I can ask him a couple of questions, and then if I don't get the right answer, I have to ask it again. He's upset with me, right?
Well,
and then
John, he just goes, you gotta figure it out. John grew up in Piatone, which is 7 miles north of Mantino.
Oh, really?
Okay. Yeah, he grew up in Piatone. Like, he's older than me, so I didn't really know him. My parents kind of knew him. And then I was building my 50 Buick. That would have been about probably 91.
Mm-hmm.
And I had that 510 Siamese bow tie thing, and he'd heard us building this Thanksgiving. And I was working on it, and he comes walking in, introduces himself.
Yeah.
And, hey, what are you doing? And then the rest is history. And so we did that three-stage nitrous EFI motor and that.
This would be a worthwhile podcast for us to do, to do the generation of aftermarket EFI.
Oh yeah,
because it all
most of it, if it's anything related
to outside of Motec and the stuff that came from Australia and things like that.
It's John.
It's mostly John. Yeah.
Yeah,
I mean,
Holly,
you talk about
Holly.
If you Holly the trail back far enough, it comes back to DFI.
Yeah, yep. So we dynoed all our engines, my Buick, Rambler. I mean, everything we ever did, we dynoed up at his house. For a long time, and it was fun.
I was up there. It was 3 days after PRI, and we had this big snowstorm, and all we did was sit around every night and talk and tell John Lingenfelder stories.
Yes.
It was so much fun.
Yeah, I guess that kind of struck me on it, because I did that, his twin turbo Corvette I did for him probably in, I did the fabrication on it, and I'm going to say probably about 98.
Okay.
He brought it down, and I just did, you know, I didn't know nothing. I built the headers, did what he wanted, this and that. And, I mean, that car kind of became legendary.
Yeah,
And I never forget. Lingenfelder came over to the shop because John wanted some cam secrets from John, and John wanted some EFI stuff from John. So it was kind of interesting. And he heard about this Corvette.
Uh-huh.
And the car was garbage, but it was fast, man. So, that started, and that spawned the chicane. We did the twin turbo 62 Chevy for Glenn, and then I've done probably six twin turbo street cars.
That was very cool.
So we've had a lot of success in the and half the stuff we still do is turbocharged.
Uh-huh.
So
did
a turbocharged 401 nail head.
Uh-huh.
It's all dry sump and trick. And
that's part of the movement now, isn't it? The obscure engines in the street rod market.
Yeah, it has to. If you're gonna, it's real safe and easy, as you know, do an LS or an LT because they're great. They don't leak. You can make a ton of power. You don't got to get all goofy inside.
Right.
And they work. But like to make a statement, you gotta get outside the box because that's the difference. Like we did we set a record 4 years ago in gas flathead out at Bonneville, gas roadster.
Yeah.
Everybody wants the fastest flathead. It might be one of the biggest classes, right?
Wow.
So you gotta use a 49 to 52 Ford block, not a French block. You gotta leave the valves in the block. Mechanical injection, no electronics.
Wow.
Those are the basically three.
So
anything
really
else goes.
Stuff.
Yeah. Okay. So I took a flathead, cut it in four pieces in a bandsaw, and then we fixtured one piece onto Bob, our engine guy's flow bench. Took all the aftermarket cylinder heads, flowed it, and got the CFM number to start with, right? Because Bob, my old engine guy, he's like, if you can't get the air in and out in this class, you didn't work going any further.
We
spent about 5 months, me and Lawrence that works for me, designing the combustion chamber with him. And made a bunch of acrylic ones, and we doubled the CFM. We got we got 150 out of it.
Wow.
And maintained the compression, because you can lose the compression on that motor instantly.
Okay.
So we did all that, and so we made.
So the stock flow on the intake valve was like 70.
And we got it to 150. We got it to went to a 1.8 750 valve, and it's all shrouded. It was really interesting. Yeah. And so we made the cylinder heads in two piece, filled the block, and then we cut our intake runner down through the, because we did a cam reverse, you know.
Okay.
And then our intake runner goes through the water jackets. It's a straight shot to the valve.
Wow.
So we first cut it cut them in there, and then we filled the block and then went back and then cut them back out. Uh-huh. So we had a straight shot at the valve.
Wow.
And then we took Kinsler motorcycle throttle bodies and bored them.
Sure.
Had eight stack on it, mechanical injected. Mm-hmm. And we made 307 horsepower.
At what RPM?
7,200.
7,200?
Yeah.
Oh, Jessel wow. That's really spinning it.
Cam and lifters.
Is that still a three main bearing motor?
That one was.
You went 7,200 on a three main bearing?
We did another
version. That's crazy. That's insane.
And we went out first time, set the record.
And I don't doubt it.
That motor we filled with Devcon, so it started delaminating. Block had been bored out a lot, so the cylinders were thin. You'd run it three, four times, and they're all hourglass. You know, it's six tight, three loose.
Wow.
You know, so we got our butt. We got our butt kicked. So then we're like, you know what? This is unstable. Mm-hmm. But we got the record. So we took another unbored flathead.
Okay.
And we did the same thing to it, but this time after we machined the runners, I brought it up and we made a bunch of parts and vent tubes, and we filled it full of aluminum.
Okay.
And then we went back and machined it. So now we got everything inside's aluminum.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah.
And that's the new motor we did. And so then we're like, well, we added nitrous so we can go to the fuel class.
Okay.
And we're going to run it in gas and modified. We made a track nose, a lot of daddy. So we're like, you know, we're not still making a ton of power, but let's go ahead and address the crank. So we had a ghosted Moldex crank. So we did the other two mains.
Nice.
And then at the shop, Lawrence, that works for me, we designed the pan girdle. So you billet pan girdle, so you take and you mount the crank on the bench and put the two mains on, flip it over, and goes in there, and it's got oil squirters in it.
Nice.
It's a pan girdle to squirt the pistons.
Okay.
Made a billet pan, 6-stage dry sump daily,
and
we oil it from the bottom up. Now we change the oiling, oiling, and I mean it's really something. I mean it looks like about an 80s.
That's
F1
quite the engineering
motor.
Feat. I think
we're more excited going 168. Than like going 320.
Oh, you bet.
Because it's time. You either get it right, you know. Yeah, right. It's a little bit of time and fuel. That's all you can do.
Yep.
You bet.
So it was. Yep. It was really gratifying.
Wow.
Yeah. No kidding.
I had no idea.
Oh, yeah. We're into some really weird stuff, and we're doing right now. One of our next projects is we're doing a 39 Hudson pickup. So
I wouldn't have picked
that
one.
We're taking the fenders off. So no fenders.
Yes, okay.
It's going to look like a sprint truck from the day.
Yeah, okay. Sure.
We're going to make the bed, chop the cab
up. Oh, that's cool.
Torsion bar.
How fun.
We have a 1936 V12 Cadillac, twin turbo fuel injector.
Wow.
It's the overhead valve motor. It's the real tall one.
Okay.
So you got that out of a wrecking yard? Is that what you're saying?
I bought it. I had to buy the whole car. Yeah.
I bet.
They're pretty rare.
I bet.
Yeah. 39 Hudson truck with a V12 Cadillac.
Cadillac. And then from 1936.
36. So it's the overhead valve.
Oh, yeah.
Then they went to the flathead.
Okay. Yeah, you bet.
And then what's the displacement?
It's small. Yeah.
Yeah, it's not big.
230 inches.
240 maybe.
240.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's.
So pistons are this big around.
Yeah. It's an interesting engine. So that's a fun one that we're doing
it's funny because I've been working in the Peterson archive and I'm finding all these obscure things, but you know, as we know, and as you talk to any of the outside folks, you know, the octogenarians who are walking around here,
right,
that was the way they built cars. I mean, it was always obscure swaps and transmissions.
You ran what you did.
It wasn't all small block Chevrolets and four speeds.
Yep.
So that kind of thing is, you know, kind of going back, and obviously I understand that's really exciting, because it's not the same old thing.
No, that's the X factor for something like that, right?
Yeah.
Like the 36 that we brought here this weekend, we built the car from scratch, and it's a 36 Highboy, obviously, which Ford never made. Everybody said, man, it'd be neat if they'd have done that. And a couple guys have taken the fenders off. They look terrible.
Yeah.
So this one, we built the body from scratch and everything, and it's reproportioned. But the engine choice in that was a Y-block, because Ross, we're building it for, has got kind of a 50s hot rod collection. So that's kind of a 50s hot rod motor.
Yeah,
so we just took a 56 Y-block, but it's got an old VR57 on it, no blower.
Okay.
And we sent it to a guy in Texas, and he puts the new guts in it, and puts it on his Ranchero and test drives it. And, and blowing through
that
three.
That was a McCulloch Supercar,
McCulloch.
It was a ball drive.
Yes, absolutely. So we took out all that
Mickey Mouse
nonsense and put new. It's got late model parts in it, but it looks the same.
Okay.
You're talking about the supercharger.
It's got three two barrels on electronic, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And we made all the front drive and that, but Like those wow. engines, even we go to the extent of, you know, we make the valley pan, the valve covers, oil pan, we machine all that, but mm-hmm. the only gasket in that motor is the head gaskets. Really? Everything else is O-ringed. We wow. O-ring and dowel pin the timing cover, the water pump.
Makes sense.
Wow. Oil pan, wow. valley pan.
Yeah, it makes good sense.
So obviously. We spend a lot of time on the function side of those motors.
Yeah, the fitment is just going to be perfect.
Has anybody ever done anything on your flathead motor that you did?
You know, there's a great wheel hub followed it, and we did a bunch of pictures.
Okay.
And they've got the whole thing to do the article, but they've never put it in there yet. And, I mean, it's really? It's like, because I want, I actually, I don't ask for anything, but I'm like, uh-huh. you guys really need to, like, get a grip on this thing because it's serious.
Yeah,
you
bet.
And the parts that we made for the thing are, I mean, absolutely
top my gosh. Yeah.
And so they do have all the information and pictures. And I'd really, they haven't done it yet, but I mean, it's really interesting.
So if they have all the information in the photos, all they need is someone to
just
got to
put it together.
You know anybody?
Yeah. Well, it's on them, trust me.
Yeah, okay.
I mean, because that's really technical. I mean, you'd get all of it, but that's super. Yeah, yeah. We run LS1 Beehive valve springs in it.
Yeah,
and,
yeah.
You know, a bunch that's of cool. weirdo stuff.
Yeah, sure. But that's good.
But it's super trick. I mean,
because you use the technology that's developed, might as well.
Absolutely. No, it's mega trick. And the parts that we made, I mean, and it's, you know, it's about $1,000 a horsepower, you know.
Yeah, no kidding.
It's 300 like, grand to like, make 300, but.
Kind of like pro stuff.
But you understand. I mean, some guy, it's just spend the money on it. No, because I got two other guys I know personally that are in the class that are customers that have spent twice that, and they're 20 off the record.
Yeah.
So it is the money, but it's not. Because
it's not.
If you ain't got the right group of guys doing it,
you bet.
You could throw all the money in the world. Yeah. You're not going to get there.
When you're developing stuff like that, you make one decision early on, that's not the right one. Takes you off of this tangent.
And you never know what happened.
And you didn't know what happened. You almost have to come back to here
all the
to
way
start
back.
Over to
yes.
go.
But you have to know to come back to that point.
You have to know to come back to that, which is not absolutely. Necessarily obvious.
No, it's not obvious.
It's not like on TV where they plant this clue in the front. You know, the camera's on the clue for 5 seconds. Like, that's important, right? You don't get that when you're doing this kind of stuff.
It's like an automotive survivor.
Yeah.
Hey, we'd like to thank our sponsor, ARP-Bolts.com. We got a fantastic little backdrop here. They make an outstanding series of bolts, almost anything you would need for engines, chassis, things like that. In fact, we were at lunch today, and a guy asked you about the bolt on the back of your shirt, and I said, well, it's really about a head bolt. They neck the stem down of the bolt on a short small block Chevy head bolt, so the clamp load is even across three different head bolt lengths on a small block Chevy. And, you know, so that's the kind of technology that you get out of ARP. And we've all got stories on all that stuff.
Well, for a translation of what he said, call ARPbolts.com.
But the message is that you can't get any better than that.
No, you cannot.
There you go.
Nope. Excellent.
And then just check them out at ARP-bolts.com. We'd like to thank our friends at InTheGarageMedia.com. They have three fantastic magazines. They've got Classic Truck Performance, they have Modern Rodding, and my favorite, All Chevy Performance, with Nick, my buddy Nick,
who's
the
so
editor.
Oh, you're so biased.
So, correct. Yes, of course. Yes. But they're doing print media, which is, of course, our favorite. So, In color and everything. Yes. And you can get your car on the cover of one of those books, which is a fun deal.
Great tech.
By you know, not always written by me, but yeah. People. Yeah.
Not
yeah.
always written by me.
That's right.
Just so pick it up and
read
it.
At InTheGarageMedia.com, and they're our friends, and they will thank you.
So it was really, it was really something. I'll never forget the day we were on a flow bench, and we got to 150, man. I mean,
it was dancing in the streets.
That was easy. You know? It was. It was really really cool. I mean, it was what a challenge. And who
are you building these for?
Matt Jewell is a guy. He's in Davenport, Iowa, and he's got it's an interesting story.
Do I know that name? For some reason, that sounds familiar.
It's Jewell Machine. He's got a couple cars.
Maybe not. Okay.
And he's in Davenport,
okay.
You know, because he's around John Deere and all. He's got a huge machine shop, and they service like John Deere, Case, Bobcat, all that kind of stuff. And he had raced at Bonneville for 4 years in that class, four different engines, to the point where he'd pick the engine up from the guy and he'd tell him X horsepower, he'd go out there and run the same speed.
Yeah.
So he's like, what's going on? He bought his own dyno even to verify, because he's like, what's going on?
Yeah.
And we'd built a 34 Roadster for Mariani's, a maroon. It was a street roadster
we built,
and it was we really stretched the rule book on it. And we went out there, and it's set four or five records now in a. And he's seen that. He's like, man, this is kind of interesting. Called, introduced himself. He's like, hey, I'm from Davenport. I got Bonneville. I'm So he came over and we talked. He wanted to build a new car. I'm like, your car's pretty good, you know. Let's look at the engine.
Yeah.
So we did the engine project, and it was good because he's got massive machining capability, but he let us, you know, he let us do what we do, and it really
impressive because you guys are not necessarily known as engine builders.
No, you're not really. Car builders. Yeah. But we do.
But you just took the project on. Yeah, and said, we do because right?
You know he knew we did the four cylinder the thing and right. You know, and all V8 stuff. Mm-hmm. The V8 stuff's one thing. It's kind of more right. Just putting the right parts together. But yeah. The four cylinder's one off, and then obviously that was, and then yeah. And then we'd done all these weird engines, yeah. But it was a great challenge, and he's the guy that we're building Hudson truck for.
Oh, okay, very cool. Yeah.
So yeah. He's got a really
this guy
cool.
Guy can't get enough.
Yeah. He's got a really cool perspective on things.
I think he's you know, the desire's been planted.
Right? Yeah, yeah. So it's fun, and then and we have the technology. I bought a really good. I've got the best creoform scanner they make. You know, it's 0.9 of a thousandth. So we scan them blocks, and I mean, it's funny. You'll appreciate this. So we scan that flathead.
Uh huh.
And the basically the mains aren't, you know, in their exact spot. So
they're gonna wander around. By the time
we did the Molex crank and all that, well, uh-huh. the journals for the rods aren't in the center per se. So we knew exactly where everyone was at. Like, you know, it's like 10 or 15 thousand, it's not much, but we're looking for maximum efficiency.
Sure.
So that's friction. So we actually took, after we had the connecting rods in, we put them in our CNC, and we, on the small end, we'd cut them left to right and mm-hmm. move the piston to the center.
Yeah.
So that's where like that scanner really is incredible.
Yeah. Wow.
And we do a lot of front drives, and like the V12 is going to have a 4L65 behind it because we have that removable bell housing.
Yeah,
nice. So we've scanned it all and set up the torque converter, making our own bell housing to go to the 4L65 from that Cadillac motor.
Yeah, nice.
But really make it work right. You know, boy, I mean, not just, it works and it'll get you there. I mean, really, really do it right.
I really want to see that Cadillac.
So it's going to be cool. And we're doing currently doing a 40 Cadillac LaSalle flathead where we scan the whole thing and we stroke the crank a half inch.
Wow.
On it and ran it through all the software. And I own all the software, but I'm a TIG welder. I own it all and work with him, but I'm not a software. I'm not a technology guy. But so we stroked it a half inch, and it's turbocharged and injected. You know, with a 6-speed transaxle. In a 40 Cadillac LaSalle convertible.
40 Cadillac.
Wow.
The West Rydell.
That's very cool.
Yeah. So really kind of neat package too. And, so a lot of neat. Need engine stuff.
I bet. I had a question for
you. Old engine stuff.
Yeah, exactly. That is crazy, and this is kind of going reeling back. I remember seeing, you sent me a photo one time of a third-gen Camaro that was going through that whole thing. Did that ever get completed?
We're painting it right now.
You're painting it right now.
Really? We waited for the right time. You know, now it's hot, and it is really something. I mean, it's a... You know, it looks like an IMSA road race car.
It looked like that. Did you see these photos?
No.
That's
it's
what we
crazy.
Made it look like, you know. And we've been working on it, honestly, for 15 years.
I know.
Really?
Because I was a Flowmaster when I first saw it.
I tried to talk Joe out of it for 5 years doing it. He was an engineer at GM for 40 years.
Okay.
There you go.
And, you know, had 3,000 miles on it, and he started taking it apart, and then I met him, and, you know, and so we work on it a little bit, and then build two cars, and then work on it a little bit, build two cars, and then kind of, you know, it's like, it's kind of,
I would
kind
love to see that. I mean, it was just beautiful.
I'm telling
it was all in metal.
It's a twin turbo 406, you know, daily dry sump, 4L80. The cage is very organic in it. It's all kind of weird formed on the Pomax. It's all Motec.
Okay.
It's got 488 Ferrari brakes on it that are just, I mean,
really?
I've studied that for a long time on what caliper nobody's used in this industry.
Uh-huh.
And came across that and then finished it the way I want. So it's got F1 wheel hub, the real legit, like, you know, nuts and hubs.
Oh, yeah.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
Because I want it to be legit. And it's modern color. It's called Squid Ink Blue. So it's a weird color. You know, it kind of fits more of this modern stuff.
Uh-huh.
And not a lick of carbon fiber on it. I refuse to do that because that's the trend, right?
So I went
absolutely the other way.
Very true.
But we're painting it right now, and it's really something. I mean, it ain't for everybody, you know, I would say. You know,
What color is it?
It's Squid Ink Blue.
Oh, the whole car.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, and it's kind of, we did like
Squid Ink Blue.
Yeah, we're doing this.
Dark.
You know, it's all angular. You've seen it. So in the door area, we're going to do a satin. We do a lot. Like, we take this. On all the jobs you do, we take the stock mix and paint a lot of the car, but then we just play with it. We add black to it a lot of times, and then we do satin. So it's in the same tone, you know, they work well together. So it'll have like a satin panel on the side, and we're going to play off that IROC. It ain't going to say IROC. I think it's say like F87, but kind of play off a little bit of what it was.
Yeah,
sure.
And stuff. But if you appreciate fabrication and want to see something different, it'll be fun to look at. It's not for everybody.
Right.
But it's
an IRS
rear end. It's got a the big gosh darn it, Mark Williams, the big crazy that
Oh, the
wild
the
flange big center section. And the one thing about it is it just, I don't know, it's definitely unique. But like, and we're not social media guys, and we don't do much on our website. But like, if you put a picture of that thing up,
it will
out-hit.
Oh, you bet.
If you everything I built combined, it'll triple it.
Really?
It's really, yeah,
there's a
really
out there
unusual
with them cars. It's,
oh, yeah.
It's unbelievable.
Well, that third generation, when they first showed up in 82, they were revelational.
Oh, yeah.
And that was really good-looking car. And then they slowly modified it. And I had a lot of fun with those cars because so there's a lot of as opposed
that
to the
was our era.
That as opposed to the Gen 4s, which never hit with me. But anyway, those were good looking cars to begin with. I remember seeing one in the proving not the proving grounds, but in the design center at the tech center at Chevrolet, and I thought that was an unbelievable car. So what you've done,
it's
just
cool.
builds on
and
that.
You can still you know what it is. I mean, you look at it, it's it's whacked out, but you still absolutely know what it is.
Yeah.
You know? I mean, it's not we didn't lose it but it's
Very
really something. I mean, it's an eye turn. I just really like the color came together right on it and paying
attention. So it's a dark blue.
Yeah, it's kind of a dark, muddy, grayish blue.
Okay.
Milky.
Okay.
You know, we're kind of known for weird colors, so it's kind of a milky, snotty, I call it.
There
I told Joe that owns it, I go, if it pulls up and you turn around, the first thing in your head better be snotty. If they say it's pretty, then we do need to crush it.
Yeah, something, you know, something's wrong
because it needs to be snotty.
You bet.
And,
you bet.
I mean, it's legit. I mean, it's really something. And then we took all the – just trying to, you know – like all the ARP bolts, you know, took all the 12 points and, you know, lightened them up. So, and then, and then we're putting them, Matt, actually, my customer with the flathead, they make cutting tools for a living also.
Okay.
So they've got all the vapor deposition coatings, you know, like when you put the tungsten on the cutters where they, you know, they 2000 degrees spin it and it vapor impregnates and all this other business. So we're doing some samples right now on some ARP bolts because I want them like a different color.
Okay.
But but you got to be able to wrench on them and not tear them up.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, it's got to be functional.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
we're just trying to do a lot of different little mechanical things like
Excellent.
That.
Very cool.
They make the best stuff.
They do. There's no competition.
Yeah.
I mean, they're
I agree.
Hands down. I mean, I've got my dad has I think the record when he was alive. The quick backstory on ARP. So I was a sniper driving it cross country that year.
Yeah.
And about 97 probably. And I don't know where we were at, around the middle of nowhere, and this guy comes walking up, and he goes, hey, I like your bolts. You know, he's looking at the engine, it was, and it was Bob Flooring.
Yeah.
And I go, oh, yeah, I said I got them at my local hot rod shop, Winter Circle.
Yeah.
He goes, oh, Jim? You know, he knew the, I'm like,
he's this guy.
There you go.
You know, we're in Oklahoma or somewhere.
Yeah.
And he goes,
size
oh, you mean Jim? Yeah. I go, how do you know him? He goes, he introduced himself.
Uh-huh.
And then, I mean, took care of us from the from that day on.
Yeah.
Because I was buying them, and
because
I'm a fastener guy big time. And so my dad, you know, Bob's like, hey, you know, send us what you need, you know, and this and that. And I think we got the first order we got from him was probably 700 pounds. It was on pallets. I think Bob said it's the largest free order they sent out. So it was, I've got literally I've got everything they make, literally.
Yeah.
I'm a, kind of, a, I guess I'm a called a stocking dealer. But,
yeah.
And then they do a lot of special stuff for us, too. And,
sure, I bet.
Well, with all these unique engines, you're
we do a lot of crazy, you know, all their studs,
especially. Like all those flathead motors.
Crazy
have
studs
their
and
own
stuff they're doing.
Right?
Yeah.
You make long studs, so they go down to the bottom of the cylinder?
Yeah. You got to tie them, some of them together.
Yeah.
Otherwise,
and that's something
apart.
I didn't even know, realize at first, was that they'll do anything for you.
Oh, yeah.
If you give them a
custom.
Real spec and what you're doing and, you know, and all that stuff, they'll build it for you.
Yeah,
and it's free. They give it to you for free.
Yeah, and they have a lot of stuff that nobody even knows about.
Yes.
Oh,
so you want to call them extras or whatever.
By far.
They can have a whole catalog just on that stuff, you know, but and they'll make anything you want as long as you give them ample time, which I'm not good at that, you know. I need it yesterday because I'm a bad planner. And like I tell Bob, I'm like, you know, I buy a lot of stuff from ATEC, you know, and I mean daily. And I buy a lot of bolts from there. I don't go back and beat these guys up. You know, they help me get going.
Sure.
And
you bet.
I'm using their stuff and I buy their stuff. Flowmaster mufflers, that's all I still use.
And
like on this 36 we brought, I really love the laminar flow stuff. And I remember talking to Ray about it and how he designed it and the whole theory behind it. And I was lucky to be around that in the late 90s.
Ray Pfluger, the original.
Brilliant man. And that's just the right sound.
Yeah.
So, but I want a little nicer can. So I take the guts out and I make my own can and
pretty
it up.
Enough.
And but I get the sound that I want.
Yeah.
And so
I spent a lot of time with
it. So tell us about this car on the show.
So we brought. So we did this Ross Myers, who were building it for, and we won the Riddler Award in 07 with a 36 Ford 3 window, and it was for the same gentleman. And he had bought the car. My dad met him at the, I think it was the 40th anniversary of the Mustang in Nashville. I wasn't there, and he came in the booth asking some questions. I think we had that eBay Mustang we did there. And he was asking questions, this and that. My dad's like, hey, I think this guy wants to, you know, do a Riddler. I'm like, yeah, whatever. So everybody does, right?
Sure, yeah.
So he showed up.
Got a plan.
Yeah, we were unveiling a couple cars at the shop, and he showed up, and I met him, and he's showing me that he had been working on it for 5 years, you know.
Okay.
And he tells me the story. You know, I bought the car when I was 9 years old for $25.
Wow.
And right then I knew I had the right guy.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. This is a true believer.
The right guy.
Yeah.
He goes, I put in my dad's barn, and you know, I knew I always whenever when you have enough money to do it and this and that. So anyway, so we took the car, built it, and luckily we won. And so then about 6 years ago, he said, hey, you know, I'd like to, I think we're at SEMA, we had lunch, and he's like, I'd like to have a contender at Amber's, you know, 36 Ford. And I'm like, shoot, man, not another damn three window, you know? I'm like, we don't do that many cars, so I don't want to do the same thing.
Same thing again, yeah.
And then Adam, that works for me, and Ross kind of at the same time goes, but, you know, fenderless. And they're like, okay, now we're talking.
Yeah.
Now we got a challenge.
Yeah. Right.
So
yeah.
The idea came up about, you know, 5-6 years ago, and then we were busy, so we waited. So we got going on it. We've got about 16 months in it now, so... Mm-hmm. It's our version of a fenderless 36 Ford, which, you know, a lot of the true Ford guys thought would have been a great thing for Ford to make, but they didn't. Some guys have tried to take the fenders off the cars, and they look terrible. So this one's all reproportioned, and we built everything, but we didn't, the tires and the engine block, basically. I mean, we built the radiators, the steering columns, you know, modify the mufflers. The body's built from scratch. The frame, it's all torsion bar. And it's a Y block with the VR57 blower, and it's just... The X factor is it's a 36 high boy, you know, and Adam that works for me that's here, he did all the body. It's all his brainchild on the look of it, and I mean it is.
So there's not a single panel that's the same.
Nothing. Wow. No, we made all of it.
Because once you start changing the proportions,
it wasn't worth starting with a roadster because their bodies are expensive and they're rare, and you're not using any of it. Mm-hmm. So we did have an original one just to make all the die sets off of, so at least the stampings look correct, you know, and. It's been a long time since I've got the response. And I like this show because this is by far the biggest group of guys that know what they're looking at from a quality standpoint, especially like in metal shaping and stuff. So we brought it here raw, and it's about 80% done. But it's our best by 50% of anything we've done by far. And it'll drive well because we did a Model A a few years back here with torsion bar and all that. Steve Mole helped me and kind of get the idea of that stuff. And, I mean, it isn't. Fabulous driving car. The torsion bar stuff's really good.
I recommend painting it hot pink.
I could probably pull that off.
Yeah, you probably could. Or the mint green.
Cam, that comes up all the time. Like all these colors. Like, what were you doing? I'm like, well, first of all, I didn't have a lot of money, and I just want to see different stuff.
Sure.
It's not for everybody.
Right.
But
right.
How you get the biggest bang for your buck
exactly.
is part of it. Like painting the bumpers, I didn't have the money to chrome them. You know.
So
that whole monochromatic thing was good. But but it was more just giving people something fresh to look at.
Yeah, right? Absolutely.
I mean, you can do the nicest job on something, but if they're sitting there looking at it and comparing their head to, it looks like it's the one Jim did, or you know, and you're comparing it, you missed it. When you're looking at something and you've done it right, and it's like, man, I have not seen this stuff done like this.
Right.
They should have something. That's what we strive for now.
It worked good for the covers, the magazine covers, too, because bright color like that, man, they're just going to jump right on it.
I went to Australia in 07 for the Street Machine Nationals. I was a Grand Marshal.
Yeah.
And they had a little booth set up for me, and, you know, I was there all day, and I'm telling you, I signed 10,000 of them centerfolds of the 60 Chevy.
Yeah.
I mean, it was unbelievable. It's the only car I ever built.
Yeah.
I mean, it was, and they all had them still, and they were perfect. And because they were always a few years behind us over there.
Sure, right.
And it was amazing how they really pay attention over there to what we're doing. And luckily, through all the Featherston and all the guys and Hot Rod, I had a pretty good presence over there.
I went in '88 to the Street Machine Nationals.
Okay.
And Featherston and all that. Chick Henry.
Chick Henry,
Who was just
great
guy. He just passed away.
Great guy.
So it was quite the place.
Yeah, we lost David, too.
About 3 years ago. Yeah, David's gone, but
good people.
Yeah, really good people. Yeah. He was such a good friend. Yeah, you know, had so many great stories with him. He'd come in with that filtered, you know, that kind of horizon look.
His classic Featherston image.
But that's what made him special, and he was really good at what he did.
And they were always good to you know, I was a young guy in the beginning. They were always gracious enough to always introduce you to the right people.
Mm-hmm. And that was
climbed the ladder.
Yeah, that was really David. David was really good, and McClellan, Kevin, but. Yeah, David really liked when he could help grow a lot of that stuff, and he was very good at it. You know?
Yeah,
brought me onto Flowmaster, and that was a very good period of time.
Yeah,
so
no, it was
very cool.
All the good people that have went, you know.
Oh yeah.
You know, it's too bad. But
we got we can say that all day long.
Yeah,
I'm telling you.
Unfortunately, yeah.
That guy died last week. You say, he was a good guy.
Well, that's part of it, especially for you because you started so young.
Yeah, I got in with that group. You know,
most
a lot of them are gone now. But I was very lucky, you know, because somebody would come up to me. Oh, you see so and so? I'm like, who's that?
Yeah,
it's you know, and they're doing a good decent job at some internet. I don't know who they are.
I understand.
Not on the internet.
Yeah, but that's
YouTube is doing that thing, right?
Joke is if it doesn't happen in the shop, we don't know about it. And it doesn't keep your mind fresh.
That's a good
but
place to be.
All kinds of things happen because it's stuff that you're doing.
Right. Stay off of it, like from a designing a car standpoint,
right?
I can understand taking bits and pieces to learn and, you know, for a younger guy. But
for
us, we're not on it at all because we don't want to be influenced by anything.
Right?
That's
great.
We want to take what we're doing and let it influence you.
Make it your
idea. And it's really worked for us. So we kind of stay away from
it. And I think it's been fairly successful.
I would say.
That's awesome.
Well, listen, thanks so much for coming up, man. This has been a lot of fun. I had no idea Blowfish had gone that fast.
Oh, yeah.
300 miles an hour.
Yeah. We're slow now. Jessel gave me a couple NA motors. We're running Dodge in it again, but like 240 or 299 inches.
Only 240 miles an hour.
So we know it's safe because we spun to 290. So.
There you go.
So.
Spin and win. Spin and win.
Yeah. A lot of fun.
Awesome. Really good to see you.
We want to thank our sponsor, ARP-Bolts.com, helping us out to do all the stuff we couldn't do without them. And also the guys at Grand National Roaster Show, John Buck and Kevin. And if you like what we're doing here, we're going to keep telling stories. Watch us, and we'll keep doing it.